Would the clerk please call the case?
The court will now call UATP Management versus Legal Faith and Interest. May it please the court, Mr. Kenneth Rudolph, the order from the appellate, Mr. John McDowell, the order from the appellate.
You may proceed.
Good morning.
So here's another TCPA case for you. This is the franchise case of the morning. UATP has the Urban Air Adventure Park franchise. And this is disputed with this buyer for installing the ride in the case. There were four issues that were attacked under the TCPA. Attempts to claim two tortious interference claims and harmful access by computer by the trial court. Dismissed the attempts to claim under the TCPA. We're left here with the other three. So I'm just going to march through the same elements of application, commercial speech, modification case. Starting with TCPA application, the faith concedes that the TCPA applies to the tortious interference with time act and the tortious interference with business relations claim to do that at page 37 of the brief. So I'm not going to spend a lot more time on that unless the court asks questions. We think it's almost self-evident from the pleadings, because all the communications that are signed in the pleadings for those claims, that you have communications and that they're covered as a matter of public concern because of human service in the marketplace, and health and safety. Never mind the Michael Browning affidavit, which is the UATP principal. Never mind the Garth Price affidavit, which is the legal principal. So we think we have TCP application undisputed on the tortious interference claims. Perhaps the more interesting question is TCP application to the harmful access by computer. So by harmful access by computer, it's literally a claim to recover communications in the form of this email domain of lofadv.com, lofadv.com. So there's communications associated with this email domain, and it's undisputed on the record that UATP's communications are part of that email domain. So it's not just LOFA communications. UATP communications are part of the claim. So far we have communications under the act. Then the question is, well, are those communications in connection with a matter of public concern or with common interest under right of association? We would submit that they are for two reasons. Reason number one is that the email domain was provided by UATP to Legal Faith. That is in its essence, is the provision of a good or service in the marketplace. So now you have communications, including UATP communications, on the email domain, and it's being provided by UATP to Legal Faith as part of their business relationship. So I think you could almost stop there. You have a good or service in the marketplace under the public concern requirement. But then secondly, it's undisputed that the email domain has Legal Faith communications on it, and they're the only approved supplier for installing and repairing the rides during our relevant time period. So the only approved supplier has their communications on the domain that we're providing. And they say in the brief, it was an email domain they used to communicate with customers and suppliers, had their business records. That's a briefing page at page 37. So we think that it's a fairly simple matter, even though the harmful access by computer claim is a little bit unique. Under the Supreme Court's recent opinion in Tarrant County versus Bonner, which was an appeal from opinion this court, the court used very broad language. I think it might have been broader than the Coleman case, where it said not just tangential, but also tenuous, however related. So that's explaining the definition of in connection. So in this recent opinion of Tarrant County versus Bonner, they made it even broader. Adams versus Starside out of the Texas Supreme Court did it already, where it wasn't the subject matter of the complaint, but they said, okay, it's related to, and that's good enough. So we think we have TCP application. And in fairness to Legal Faith, when they concede tortious interference for application, they did it because they pivot to commercial speech. That's what they did. So let's talk about commercial. First of all, the commercial speech defense asserted by, if you will, the defense of the application of the statute, asserted by Legal Faith, is limited only to one aspect of the claims, and that's limited to tortious interference with contract, not even business relations, as to actual potential customers. They don't apply commercial speech to the harmful access claim. They don't apply it to the employee aspect of the tortious interference claims. Neither do they apply it to the supplier aspect of the tortious interference. It's only applied to tortious interference contract as to actual or potential customers of with the faith. So we would submit that the commercial speech exemption does not apply for the simple reason that we don't have sales communications at the basis of this case. Without going through all the Castleton elements, which I know the court is intimately familiar with, what are the communications that you have at issue in the case? You have, if you will, allegedly interfering communications, allegedly diverting money, or seeking information from an engineering consultant, or forming an entity, or assuming a complete faith, or hiring their employees, or blocking email. None of those things fit within the four-part sales communications definition under the Supreme Court's precedent in Cassidy. So that's the sort of general reason why commercial speech doesn't apply. A simpler reason is that if you look at the briefs, out of those four elements, keep the faith only attacks the element of primarily engaged. They don't go for the second, third, or fourth elements about role of the seller for the goods and services, commercial transactions, or actual potential customer. They just go for primarily engaged. And if primarily engaged is the issue on commercial speech, there's a fairly simple answer. What does UATV do? It's a franchise. Okay, franchisers have marketing departments. Where do they market? They market their franchises. There's no franchise marketing communications at issue on this record. None. This is about a dispute between UAT and the supplier, where the supplier is complaining about UATP really exercising its rights as a franchisor to change suppliers, etc. So we would submit for those fundamental reasons that the commercial speech exemption does not apply. Okay. So now turning to prima facie case. There's a prima facie case failure over here that cuts across all the things. And that's the failure of as to damages and as to irreparable harm. So let me go through that briefly. So in the Supreme Court's opinion in Elliott, we got some clarification on damages quantification. Lipsky's really about damages causation. Right now I'm focused on damages quantification. And the standard in Elliott says, look, even though you don't have to show every detail of your damages, the court said you still have to show some reason of a rational difference for specific demonstrable damages. And in Elliott, they had numbers. There were numbers in that case that they could play with and crunch and see that there was some level of loss problems. And this record, you won't find either. You will not find specific numbers on this record of loss problems. You'll see Mr. Price's conclusory testimony, which is not evidence. The leap of faith would have made profits in the millions. Very nice. That's improper conclusive speculation. It doesn't rise even to the minimal level of the standard in Elliott. So that's lost profits. Second point of damages is goodwill. So lost goodwill is not just a function of having a lower price for the goods in the marketplace. Here was the basis for their seeking irreparable harm for their injunction. You can see that from their application for the TRO and the temporary injunction. It's in the record, page 54 of the clerk's record, where they said, look, our loss of reputation, loss of business, loss of goodwill, et cetera, were the basis for seeking injunctive relief. There's no evidence, there's no clear and specific admissible evidence. Whenever I say no evidence, I mean no clear and specific admissible evidence on this record that is, you can seek your teaching to get something other than conclusory, if you will, about lost reputation or the business, or going out of business, or what happened. The evidence that you have is Mr. Price again, the leap of faith principal saying, well, it threatened to destroy our future prospects. Again, that's just conclusion. Conclusory evidence is not evidence, even in the absence of objection, which I would say is a sign that there were numerous specific and well-reasoned, in my opinion, objections in the trial court as to this entire record, both on commercial speech and on private patient case. They were opposed. I understand that doesn't mean we win. I understand the court still has to decide whether those are sustained. We objected to the trial court that it didn't rule on them both before and after the ruling and thus sustained it for this record. We raised them in detail in our brief and cited them in detail. And we think it is enormously important that this court, the Vanderlinden case out of this court was seminal in one way, at least in one way. The Vanderlinden put evidence objections on the table in TCPA cases. That's how I saw that case. And Dallas Morning News versus Hollander in the Texas Supreme Court did it again with the Texas Supreme Court is sitting there and going through evidence rules over affidavits in the Supreme Court opinion. So the evidence objections matter. They matter a lot. And they weren't opposed, not in the trial court and not in the briefing. The next place I'd like to go is tortious interference in business relations. Prima facie case for the, I left one thing out of damages. But the last piece on damages is the cost of replacing employees. They claim that UATP was taking employees, and therefore they had a cost for replacement. First of all, there's no evidence on the record that they replaced any reports. That's one. Two is, the image that they assert is quoted from, again, from Mr. Price, a big investment of time and money for me to pay. That doesn't mean Elliot, there's nothing to teach them to that there's a big investment of time to replace the employees. And Elliot wasn't like this new thing, it was in front of all of us at the trial court level, and it wasn't presented. And again, conclusory evidence or their opinion is not evidence in the TCPA case. And that finishes the case. Turning to tortious interference now for business relations. Does the court have questions? Turning to tortious interference for business relations. So again, the scope of that claim is interesting because in the trial court, they were attacking suppliers, employees, and customers, duplicated customers using UATP franchises. That was the attack. At the briefing level, the suppliers and the employees are gone from tortious interference of business relations, and that claim should be dismissed without more under the TCPA because they just dropped it at the appellate. And all we have left, and that we make that clear in our brief, you'll see it there. So that all we have left is a tortious interference with business relations as to customers only. And so there's two points of attack I'd like to make here. One is the probability of more business, because after all, it's a business relations tortious interference claim. And the other is an independently tortious claim. And I'll refer the court to two cases that we cited in the brief. The Schlotzky's case out of the Fifth Circuit and the ProTradeNet case out of the Western District of Texas. Those are franchise cases where the franchisor, here that would be UATP, had certain rights over what suppliers would be used and when. And so in Schlotzky's, the court says, look, when you dismiss a tortious interference claim, the franchisor had the right to approve suppliers and distributors of their branded products. It's not tortious interference for a franchisor to simply exercise its right. So that goes to the probability of business. Another point that goes to the probability of future business under this claim, it really is very related to that, and that is, it's undisputed on the record that it was UATP that had the right to decide and approve who the franchisors were. And they canceled the faith franchise, I think, in February of this year. So there's no evidence on the record that they had any hope that there was going to be additional business when the franchisor has the absolute right to say, no, you're not going to be in a supplier anymore. And UATP concedes that right in their brief at page 41. Now, the other piece on this claim is independently tortious act. That's where the ProTradeNet case comes in. In that case, the plaintiff alleged that an LLC and its corporate parent had specifically told their franchise owners to stop using the plaintiff's services. And so the court said, look, okay, they did that. And at most, that was unfair or sharp. In other words, sometimes business can be rough. And sometimes the franchise will say, you're not doing this anymore. That might not be nice, but it's not tortious interference. And that's what's going on in this case, is that you have a franchisor exercising its right. And finally, in terms of the record, in terms of clear and specific admissible evidence, the Price testimony is that Leap of Faith had evidence of interference. What was it? A feeling of interference. That's in the record, Clerk's Record 494. And then finally, with regard to tortious interference with contract, in my last 2 minutes, I'm going to cover the waterfront. Tortious interference with contract is as to customers, employees, and suppliers, except that, let's just do the easy part. As to suppliers, there were three, MJ Engineering, Cheer, and Skyrider. Cheer and Skyrider, those names do not appear in the appellate briefing. We simply dropped those. So again, this claim should be dismissed as those two suppliers without more, even because they saw it in the trial court and dropped it on appeal. But as to customers, they alleged there was an allegation of money diversion. That UATP is calling franchisees and saying, hey, send your money our way. Because of course, part of the record is Leap of Faith was paying rebates to UATP as an approved supplier. Well, there's no evidence connecting the two alleged emails of diversion to any contract. And under Van der Linden, if you don't have the contract, you don't have a tortious interference. That seems pretty clear. There's also nothing but conclusory evidence of contract breach. As to employees, there are multiple grounds. There was no post-employment limitation. There was no evidence of confidentiality breach or enterprise speculation. You know, employees at will and delicious spot, and so hiring employees at will without more is not actionable. There was no clear and specific evidence that UATP hired them as opposed to another affiliate that wasn't hired, and know that's a big issue for legal defense. You're probably going to hear a lot about that. But the bottom line is the entity that hired them is not a defendant in this case. That seems to be undisputed. And then finally, it's subject to touch abuse because the employee claim is a Trojan horse claim, right? You hired our people and downloaded their information out of their heads. That's a touch of type of Trojan horse claim. That claim was dismissed by the trial court, and it's preempted by Tutson. And so is that third supplier I mentioned, MJ Engineering. That was also a Tutson-based claim where you called in MJ Engineering and asked for their information. That was dismissed by the trial court and preempted by Tutson.
Thank you.
And please support John Adell here for Legal Faith. UATP is asking you to approve their taking legal faith's businesses, customers, and suppliers its email system. Texas legislature is not...
And what proof is there in the record that it was legal faith's email system?
Good point, Your Honor. The question as to who owns the email system. Leap of Faith was a company that did installations. They started working with UATP in a small capacity, and they expanded to a 70-30 split of profits. That 70% that UATP got was, and also two other things, amount of $1,000 per park, amount of $2,000 per park, were to pay for back office. The back office was accounting. The back office was a number of things that an installation company doesn't do. And part of that was that email account. We paid for that email account, and we paid very handsomely with the 70%. And then,
where is that in the record?
Were you paying for ownership? I'm sorry.
That's at the amended reporter's record, volume 2, page 81, line 32, to page 82, line 18.
Were you paying for use of the account, or were you paying to purchase the account?
Your Honor, there's testimony that it was purchased, and the gist of the testimony is, I would never use this email account if, number one, I thought people were looking at it, and number two, I thought it could be turned off. And that's testimony from Mr. Arthur.
But how does that differentiate ownership versus right to use?
It's what Mr. Garth Price understood he got. And the point there is nobody ever said to him, ever, this is something that's temporary. If they had, he wouldn't have been using that email account. He would have stuck with what he had. So the understanding was clear and not rebutted by anybody.
That a person thinks they own something, is that any proof that they do own it?
Well, they think that they own it, and they paid 70%. They paid millions of dollars to this company, and they paid a per part fee that was $1,000 and then up to $2,000. Yes, I think I own it. That doesn't get you any place, but with these other indicia, it certainly gets you.
Okay.
UATP asks you to pay attention to one half of the TCPA, and that is they want their free speech protected. But there's another half of the TCPA that is just as important and it's just as crucial, and that's the half that protects the rights of a party to file meritorious lawsuits for demonstrable injury. In our case, Leap of Faith was a successful company. Is doing installations at various adventure parks across the country, indoor and outdoor.
And to prove your case, your meritorious claim, you've got to prove damages. And where in the evidence is there sufficient evidence to establish that there were damages, other than conclusory statements that they would have made a profit or would have made profits in the millions of dollars?
Said the Supreme Court said damages do not need to be proven with specificity. It is only incumbent upon a claimant to put forth facts from which its lost revenues will be calculated with reasonable certainty.
Okay, where are the facts that your lost profits can be calculated with reasonable certainty? Where is that in the evidence?
Facts are from Mr. Garth Price saying that he had made a profit on the 44 or so contracts that he had executed for the joint venture between the Faith and the ATP, and also prior experience. And 44 contracts is a lot of prior experience over the last 18 months or 2 years. Leap of Faith started installing pursuant to the joint venture between UATP and Leap of Faith was three attractions. And at that point, UATP had opened just a few parks under its name, Urban Air. As soon as Leap of Faith joined the venture, in less than 2 years, they had an additional 45 parks. And those 45 parks were profoundly more complex than the three attractions that they started out with. And when I say profoundly more complex, they needed engineering input, they needed know-how. Our client took various trips to China to make sure that the engineering in China was approved. And by the time all was said and done, they had a great joint venture going. They were able to open a bunch of parks with, and they made the name for Urban Air because when people walked into these parks, there wasn't three simple attractions, including a trampoline. It's Urban Air Trampoline Park. It was all of these other attractions that were very complex, very fun, very attractive to a lot of ages other than just the youngsters coming in for the trip. UATP and Leap of Faith's joint venture was when you get to net profits, you're going to divide it 70 for UATP, 30 for Leap of Faith. However, the expenses that Leap of Faith incurred by doing the engineering and getting these other attractions were a great deal more than they had been. But the price of the parks were more. Everything went up. Everything was upgraded. And UATP did not want to pay for the engineering. They did not want to pay for certain things. And they also started lending money to franchisees. But the money was to be paid to Leap of Faith in the joint venture. And Leap of Faith was out that money. Leap of Faith complained, and UATP said, look, we're selling the business. We'll sell the business at the end of 2018. Hang on, you will be rewarded. Leap of Faith hung on and came to Fort Worth area in the spring of 2018. And was given no catch-up. There was no catch-up at all. Tensions mounted, and the UATP hatched a plan to take away that joint venture, that 70-30 deal, without paying the 30 that they owed to UATP, to Leap of Faith. On May 24th, UATP started the new company that you've heard about. And in court, we heard about the new company a little bit. I took the deposition of the corporate representative of UATP, and lo and behold, he came up with records of this new company. But never in the court did UATP take the position that they were an improper party counterclaim. There's a way to do that. There's one way to do it, and it's a plea. Already swear to it under Rule 93 of the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure. May 24th, they started the new company. In June, they started contacting the franchisees with whom Leap of Faith had a contract to build out their attractions. The agreement or the communications with those franchisees were not about anything other than send us the money. Don't send that money to the Good Faith. Send us the money. A number of those franchisees did reach their agreements with the Good Faith. Those agreements were interfered with. They were signed. Some of them were in process. Some were not signed, but we have that pretty well delineated in record. And some of the franchisees did stay with the Good Faith. On July 24th, 24 employees of Legal Faith did not show up for work all in one day. And the next day, they were all working for UATP. And we know that because in the Morris versus Legal Faith lawsuit, they filed on July 25th, 2018. And the lawsuit that I asked this court to take judicial notice of, they said that these people started to work, Mr. Morris started to work on July 25th, 2018. The next day, everybody's gone. At the same time, July 24th, 2018, Legal Faith has shut out an email account that it's been using to transact business with all of these franchisees. Those communications go dark. There's no more communications there. At the same time, UATP contacted the engineering firms, and those are the firms that Leap of Faith had paid to do the engineering. Leap of Faith had worked with them to develop the properly engineered attractions and demanded from them that intellectual property that was Leap of Faith. I go over those points because they're instructive for all steps of the TCPA. And I want to make very clear that we haven't conceded anything in our papers in terms of, on page 37, the paragraph is, because Legal Faith's challenged claims involve commercial speech, the TCPA does not apply. And then we have a sentence, with regard to Legal Faith's causes of action for tortious interference with contract and prospective business relations, both claims admittedly implicate UATP's right to speak and associate. However, those underlying activities regard purely commercial transaction between admittedly competing entities. There's no concession there, and quite frankly, we have a very strong case on no public concern. There's no DFW airport bid in this case. It is between two people, two entities, Leap of Faith and UATP, and it is about money, and that's what it's about. The three steps to review a TCPA motion. UATP hasn't met its burden to show that their stealing Leap of Faith even comes close to TCPA protected actions. And they made a point, Mr. Brito made a point, that look, you know, you can't really sue for taking an employee who is an at-will employee, but the Texas Supreme Court makes a difference in the Sterner case. If it's part of this larger action, and that's why we went over these facts, we have a sound cause of action for these employees. And keep in mind that this case is procedurally different for two reasons. Number one, you have a plaintiff filing a TCPA action against our counterparts. And this is a gigantic delay from November 5th of 2018, when this was filed, to present. Everything is kind of shut down in terms of discovery and other things. So that's an interesting point. And the other interesting point is that this action is after a temporary restraining order was gotten from Judge Melody Wilkinson. And we showed up with our proof, we showed up with our affidavits, we showed up with all of that, and she scrutinized it. We were in her courtroom for a couple of hours on an afternoon. In fact, I had to run to the clerk last minute to get the TRO issue. The point being that it is clear it was clear to Judge Wilkinson, it's clear now that we've made our prima facie elements on the tortious interference with contracts, the tortious interference with perspective, and the Hocker claim. Thereafter, we filed, we argued the temporary injunction and put on live testimony there. Opposing counsel has taken the position that live testimony is not allowed in the TCPA. However, he did not share with you the case that they were relying on reverse in the Supreme Court. And that was never really the holding of that case. But the point being that if you have a statute that is silent, we can put on a lot of testimony. Unless anybody has questions, I will sit down. Thank you.
Thank you. Isn't there an exception, though, for, well, not an exception, but part of the definition of owner, isn't it that a person, whether they're a lawful owner or not, they have a greater right to possession of the property than the actor?
Yes, the statute says that. I don't think there's any evidence on this record to show that there was a greater right of access, because this is not about a facility, it's not about a device, it's about an email limit, and the record will reflect that it was on UATP's server. There was no money paid for it. This allegation that money was paid for it, what they mean to say, I think, is that they were paying the agreed rebates. They had great eyesight. We don't dispute that there were rebates that were supposed to be paid. But the provision of the email domain, which is part of the business relationship, there was no money specifically paid for that domain on this record. And there's no evidence of a greater right to use, since it was on UATP servers, it was provided as a, if you will, as just part of the business relationship. The other point I would come on to for harmful access by computer is the question of whether it applies at all as to the email domain. I think it's an interesting question. There's one case that's in the record, the Muhammad case. That case comes out, it makes it sound like the harmful access by computer statute would apply to the email domain. But in that case, it was about an email account. And in that case, it wasn't like ours where it's only the domain itself that's an issue, which is not a facility. It's not a device, it's not an interconnection, it's not a combination of computers. It's not any of the stuff the statute says it covers. It's just an email. So we would submit that that's an interesting and novel issue, and that there's no evidence on this record to show that the statute would cover any email. And of course, even if it does, Big Eagle's concession and ownership and no other evidence of a greater right. As to UA attractions, it's covered vociferously in the briefs. It was touched on in Mr. McDowell's argument. And I would just make a couple of points. First of all, they try to argue UA attractions, which is a supplier of UA to the industry. They try to argue it as an alter ego theory or a joint venture theory. None of that is pleaded. And under the Trailways opinion that we cited before in our brief, if you didn't plead it, then it's stated. You can't just come into the appellate court and start saying alter ego or joint venture. Furthermore, there's no evidence in the record really to support a joint venture that requires joint control. And here, what would the control be over? Well, it would be over the supplier business. And there's no evidence there's control over the operations of the legal faith supplier business, nor is legal faith control over the operations of the UATP supplier business. There's really no case here for a joint venture, nor was it pleaded. And furthermore, UA Attractions was not new. It's been known since last August when they accepted service in the Morris case that Mr. McDowell mentioned to you, which is a separate lawsuit. So it wasn't a new thing, judicially. So when you come in for judicial notice, I know those motions are not teed up for hearing today, but since it was raised, I would just say like this. They had notice of it before. They didn't raise it in the trial court. And therefore, judicial notice motion should be denied. And UA Attractions should not be considered. Even if it were, again, it was not properly clear. The other thing that they focus on is the diversion issue, this idea that monies were diverted. There are two example emails that are looking at the Facebooks and record, they're cited in our brief. They're kind of opaque as to what they mean. They don't say divert the money to us, especially if those emails are somewhat opaque. But be that as it may, those emails were support hearsay, they were not. Mr. Price, who offered them, had no personal knowledge of them. It was only hearsay evidence, but more importantly than all the evidence objections, which, again, are important. They weren't tied to a contract. Under Vanderlinden, if you don't have the contract, and you don't have the terms, you don't have a tortious interference. So that was that failure.
Your time is now up.
No, it's
okay. Thank you very much. Counselors, we appreciate your argument and your participation in this, and your case has now been submitted, and you are free to leave if you wish. We have one more case that will be argued. You're free to stay and listen to that if you wish. It is not an anti-slap. while that third case is queuing up and getting seated at the council table, we're going to take a brief 5-minute recess.